So what cities do they go for in your experience? Like, will they consider, like, I don't know, like a prefectural capital, say Kumamoto City, or only the Big Seven, or?
Probably I would say like bigger cities.
Okay.
The locals are jihads are harder, much harder. Yeah, they probably wouldn't even consider because the liquidity is a lot
Lower, yeah, for
worse.
sure.
Yeah.
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 Well, so
And do they have any restrictions on? So obviously, it's an investment property when you sign up for the loan. But if then, let's say you've already gotten the loan and you're servicing it and you're paying your debt and all that, will they also care if you do anything a bit more creative with it, like short-term stay, monthly stays, commercial rentals?
It's only okay for a long-term rental. You can't do Airbnb.
Cannot.
You cannot, yeah, cannot be used for short-term rental.
Monthly rentals, like if it's done with a lease.
Right. At least, yeah, only for long-term rentals. Yeah, not for
No,
Airbnb,
but
not
I'm
for sure.
asking about monthly. Like,
Midterm.
can you rent by mid-term? Yeah.
Yeah, midterm, they haven't said anything about it, actually.
Okay, let's
We have
not
to
ask them.
confirm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima, again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over 2 decades now, and for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. Right, so for today's episode, hope you've enjoyed the last couple of weeks during which we've finally released the long-awaited recordings from our summit back in April. As mentioned, we've had some issues with audio recordings, but that's finally been sorted and the downloads page is now live. You can find a link to it at the top of our homepage on nippontradings.com. And we'll link to it in this episode show notes as well, of course, in case you want to also check out the awesome videos, the photos gallery, and the downloadable slide decks from almost all of our speakers. Speaking of our speakers, I've just gone back through our archives and I found out to my shock and dismay that I've somehow missed publishing our very first conversation with Alicia Kin Wang, who you must be familiar with if you've attended our last two summits, whether in person or online. And if you're not, again, highly advised to hop over to a said downloads page or our YouTube channel and watch our presentation at the last summit. Alicia is an expert on all things related to investment loans for both residents and non-residents of Japan. And yes, if you're still not aware of it, you can get investment loans even if you're not a resident, but they do come with unique challenges and conditions, which is exactly what Emil Gorgis and I have spoken to her about in this episode, which was recorded during our first conversation with her almost a year ago now. So apologies in advance. My own personal volume settings were a bit off in the first few minutes of this episode, but that'll quickly be amended as it proceeds. In this episode, you'll get a more up and close personal introduction to Alicia, her journey, her work, and her team, the lenders that they work with, their requirements, terms, and conditions, the property criteria that they'd consider lending for, how they calculate borrowing capacity, and how we as real estate professionals advise clients on which properties they should be targeting when they're considering these loans. We also talk about some standout property profiles that she's run across in the course of her work, and then a bit about the misleading nature of Yokohama City, specifically various borrower profiles, employed versus self-employed versus not employed at all, or as many of us define ourselves, investors, the entrepreneur taxable income conundrum and how that plays into borrowing capacities and loan grants as well. And then a more personal, off-topic but not really off-topic conversation about investing in Tokyo versus other locations, what Emil and I invest in personally, and so forth. So a really good introduction to Alicia, one of our most popular speakers at the Japan Real Estate Summit events, which, oh, by the way, is coming up again on the 4th and 5th of October this year, 2025, in case you're in the process of planning your autumn trip to Tokyo. The official announcement will be out shortly, but you can secure the dates. Can't wait to see you with us then. And until then, enjoy this conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Okay.
All right. The Japan Real Estate Experts panel in a slightly truncated version. Only Emil and myself here today, but we've got a very special guest star who probably, hopefully, has some very good news for a lot of you. So I'll let Alicia introduce herself, and then Emil and I will do a quick intro just to let people know who haven't watched the podcast before who we are and what we do. But yes, Alicia, please, who are you? What do you do? What have you got to do with Japanese real estate?
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much, Dave, for giving me this opportunity to be on your show. I'm a loyal audience of your show, actually. Even before I started investing in Japan. Yeah. Yeah. I watched your show from many episodes, actually. So I started as a lawyer in the US, worked on many venture capital and private equity financing and also real estate developments. And I started to become a real estate investor back in 2014, started with commercial real estate development ground up. And then also invested in triple net projects, as well as multifamily projects in the US. I started getting to Japan back in 2022 because a very, very strong dollar. It makes look like investing in Japan would be a good play on the currency gain as well as the appreciation side. That's why we decided to go into Japan. Yeah, this is an aspect of my investment portfolio and investment experience.
So you only started, but you've had some ties into Japan previously as well, right? You're half Japanese, right? From memory?
Oh, I'm Chinese, actually. I went to 1 year of high school. It's kind of like, I think in Japanese it's called Yobiko, meaning you do like a preparation school for college, 1 year of that, and 4 year college in Japan.
Okay, so you already knew the country, so the decision to invest here was not a given, depending on the yen, but not that difficult, right?
Right, yeah. So looking back then, and back in 2022, the interest rate in the US has gone up pretty high. That just kind of becomes a deal killer for a lot of those investment that was a debt. That's why we started looking into Japan, because that's the only place in the world that you can still borrow a loan at 2% for investment properties.
Okay, well, that's a really good segue about what we wanted to talk about, because you, not being a mm-hmm. Japanese resident, couldn't get a loan in Japan, right?
No, that was not the case, actually. I'm a U.S. citizen, but I was able to get a loan with a 40% down payment for several investment properties.
Okay, so Emil's been mentioning those exist, but I've never actually met anyone who did it, not being a resident. Mm-hmm. So that was news for me.
Yeah. So actually, the loan for foreign national without any income source in Japan is very similar to the loan product we have in the U.S. In the U.S., we also have a loan product for purely foreign national with no income at all in the U.S. As long as you put your 6 months of debt service in the bank account with that particular bank, for 6 months, and also you have 40% down payment, you'll be able to get a loan. So basically, it's just a debt service coverage ratio loan. In the U.S., people call it DSCR loan.
That's not a product that Japanese banks advertise anywhere. Like I have not seen it advertised. And when you contact them to ask, that usually, like if you just walk into a bank, the reply is like, no, cannot. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Most banks don't have this product catered specifically to foreign nationals, only specific banks, or you have to know the bank, the responsible banker or the loan officer to be able to access this type of loans. Similar in the US, not many investors know about this foreign national loans.
So how did you find out?
Oh, I'm actually also a brokerage lender in the US, so I know all the loan products.
How did you find out about the
Japan? I asked my friend, okay, is there a loan that's similar to the one that we have in the US? And turned out, yes, there is.
Right. But you're saying only from very specific lender. Can you name them, by the way? Which lenders are more open to that and as opposed to most of them?
Yeah, there's several of them. There's Tokyo Star. There's Shinsei Bank. There's SBG Bank. Yeah.
There's Shinsei, is that Shinsei Bank or Shinsei Investment and Finance?
I believe it's Shinsei Bank.
Shinsei Bank. Okay. That's not the one that I'm familiar with. Okay.
Emil, feel free to jump in, man. Do you know any other banks that potentially has?
You're muted, by the way, Emil.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, I'm chatting away. Amateur move. It's like my first ever Zoom call. That's really interesting. So, Alicia, you're saying the loan terms are 40% deposit, and you need to have 6 months worth of repayments savings in the account.
Yeah, let me correct. That's the requirement for the U.S., but the requirement for Japan. For banks in Japan providing these foreign national loans are typically 40% down payment. And then the income of the borrower has to be typically above 2,000,000, which is equivalent to
150 or what, something, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, 160K US dollars. Or usually they like to see you have a very good bank statement, like liquid assets. Above
Ichigo. So they are capable of, because most of the banks that we again deal with, and they are not with these products, most of them say that, oh, we can't even evaluate your viability if it's not in Japan. So they actually review US documents, assets, income, even though it's in English and from another country.
Right, they do that, yes.
Okay.
So I guess the other detail I want to ask will it be in the client's personal name, or is it a corporate entity that's established in Japan that gets
that's in the corporate entity's name?
Okay, I understand. Okay, I have a clear picture. So that's similar to what we've done as well with some clients. So okay. We have one guy now. Yeah, so I understand
it. So which bank did you use?
That was one of the Shinsei. One of the Shinsei subsidiaries as well.
Oh, okay. Is it the same name or different names?
Same names. Same name. Is it Shinsei Investment Finance, what Ziv referred to? They're the ones I've worked with. And we've actually got one now. They're closing in. He's flying over now, like tomorrow on Friday, he'll be in town. Settlement is on the 30th, the 31st Monday. What's the last day of the month? Is that the 30th, Monday, 30th of September is settlement. So this gentleman has bought two products and he got a little bit over 40%, 60% financing. So it was about 40% deposit, just under 40% down payment. And these were older buildings and they're in Tokyo on the Inokashira line, actually, right?
Oh, which station?
In Suginamiku, around like Eifuku and Kugiyama, he's buying two buildings.
Okay.
And I noticed the banks, like they have certain requirements for buildings and their assessment. Right. Yeah, they. Right. Yeah, but it's very similar, 40% deposit. But one of the big conditions is, and I think that really needs to be clarified, is it needs to be to, in my case with my clients, we need to establish a corporate entity in Japan.
Right.
right? You need to establish a corporate entity in Japan, and then that entity has to get a Japanese bank account.
Right.
Which Shinsei Bank cannot provide to Shinsei Investment and Finance clients, which I found ridiculous. Or have you found something else?
Oh, wow.
It's near impossible to just for a non-resident director to a company with non-resident director to get a bank account. That's one of the big
That's true.
So there are workarounds. We have some workarounds around it, but they're costly and they're not easy and they're also never guaranteed. In the whole scheme of things, that's one of the issues that we have. Otherwise, more people would want to get it. But that's in my experience. But have you've done this for yourself, or have you done this for a client yet? How? What does it in your?
Yeah, it's been more than 15 investment buildings. They have helped client to buy. Go ahead.
Oh, no, so I was going to ask, so they established a company in, these are usually Americans or Singaporeans or?
Right, yeah, it's all Americans.
Americans. So they established a corporation in Japan?
Right, we usually set up entity in Japan, and then we just use that bank to open, I mean, use that corporate entity to open a bank account. But we usually have to wait until the very last minute the loan gets approved, final approved, not just like pre-qualification, but fully underwriting and fully approved. At that moment, the bank will open account.
I see.
Right. And so it's the same. It's the same bank that gives you the account. The bank which is giving you the mortgage is also, the lender who's giving you the mortgage is also the bank who's giving you the account.
Exactly. Yes.
And you still need to have a local representative director, and you've got somebody or some people in your company or colleagues that can provide that service as part of the loan at no added cost, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. No added cost. But the property has to above, it typically we require to become above Ichokuen.
Which is for our non-Japanese listeners, about 750,000 US or 800,000 US?
Right, somewhere around there. Yeah, 700K above, 700 K US dollars above.
It goes up and down with the exchange rate. But what used to be $1 million is now $700,000 because of the weekend. So,
That's true. Yeah.
Right. Oh, wow, that's exciting. Okay, so you've done quite a few of these deals already.
She's working with us on our first client at the moment, but she already came to us recommended by another one that she's been helping. So, yes.
Fantastic. Well, what are some of the requirements, like in terms of the asset or the building, that people should be aware of when they're searching? Mm-hmm. Because in my experience, like certain properties that the bank will like to give the funding. Banks like giving money. That's how they make business. They want to give the money, but they have restrictions on who they can give it to and what kind of property they can give the users collateral. What are some of the things that you've found in terms of the property search? What can what is the suitable property for this kind of project?
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akia-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akia-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Right. Yeah, so typically we will only provide to our clients the ones we have been pre-screened. We know this property 100%, you can get a loan, then we recommend it to clients. Of course, it has to be a great investment option as well. So the bank has never really published or verbally tell us what their underwriting criteria is. But from what we have seen, we know like for sure they want something that's not too old, usually prefer new built, and also the debt service DSCR, meaning the income, the rent has to be 1.5 times of the debt service.
Right.
Usually.
So, you muted again, Emil.
Sorry. Okay, the debt has to be 1.5 times.
So the income, the rent has to be 1.5 times of the debt.
Wait, I saw a creature in the back there. What was that?
Sorry, hold on. I got a little monster running back. Give me 1 second, sorry.
No worries at all.
So locations-wise, do they have any restrictions on cities, distance from stations, anything like that?
They typically prefer within 10 minutes. But that being said, for bigger station, right, like one of the biggest stations we recently did was Omori. That was 15 minutes walking. That was fine too. So
if it's like the biggest station in the city kind of thing.
Right. So they don't give you like exact numbers, but you just kind of have to work with the representative too, because the different loan officers can have their own preference. That's another thing. Like it's kind of all control.
It's all case. Well,
it's not written in the paper because bank like to have free assets. Yeah, exactly. There's kind of a discretion that's kind of really controlled by the loan officer, him or herself.
But you've mentioned Aomori, so definitely not the big seven cities. They will also do smaller towns.
No, I think she means
Aomori, Jiharu, Aomori.
Okay, in Tokyo. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, yes. I think it's two stations from Shinagawa, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's on the Yamanote line.
It's two stations from Yamanote line.
From Yamanote line, yeah, but it's nearby Yamanote line. So it's a
Tohoku, okay.
Yeah, it's not like a distant station.
So what cities do they go for in your experience? Like, will they consider, like, I don't know, like a prefectural capital, say Kumamoto City, or only the big seven, or
probably I would say like bigger cities. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The locals are Chihuahuas are harder, much harder. Yeah, they probably wouldn't even consider because the liquidity is a lot
lower. Yeah,
worse
for sure. Do they have any restrictions on, so obviously it's an investment property when you sign up for the loan, but if then let's say you've already gotten the loan and you're servicing it and you're paying your debt and all that, will they also care if you do anything a bit more creative with it, like short-term stay, monthly stays, commercial rentals?
It's only okay for a long-term rental. You can't do Airbnb.
Cannot
be used for short-term rental.
Monthly rentals, like if it's done with a lease?
Right, the lease, only for long-term rentals. Yeah, not for...
No, but I'm asking about monthly.
Midterm.
Like, can you rent by midterm?
Midterm, they haven't said anything about it, actually.
Okay, let's not ask them. Okay.
Yeah.
in my experience with these as well, we've actually got another client now who's looking for like one of those... like 2 to 3 Oko apartments in Azabu area, like just one apartment. So he's just like he's largely a cash buyer, but he's like, hey, if he's able to access some financing, then he wants to try to try to get that.
Right.
So he's looking in, and so we're providing a few properties now to the bank to assess it.
Underwrite, yeah.
You said properties over Ichiyoku. So when we look at investors wanting to get an entire building in Tokyo, in sort of the areas where the bank is comfortable using as collateral. So, you know, sometimes you get in other prefectures, you know, Ziv would know this very well, the yields you get in other prefectures outside of Tokyo, even in Saitama or Chiba or Kanagawa, a whole building, you can get 7, 8, 9% rental yield. Right. If
much, much better, yes.
And they look really attractive. However,
not to the bank.
the bank is like, well, that's not suitable for us. We need it generally in Tokyo, closer to some of the major stations, and it can't be just a beat up, rundown building.
That is so true.
What are some of the properties that you've been looking at? Are they just a single mansion, like one room, in a nice building? And if it's an entire apartment building, like a structure with multiple apartments in there.
Right. Yes, 100%.
Location, size, and cost roughly of those ones.
Yeah, so it's mainly, so it's 100% straight investment buildings, apartments, usually two level or more, up to four, usually more than 10 units. The price range is between Ichiyoku, or let's say Hasenman to 2.5, 2.5, which is around $2 million. So basically 700K to, let's say, $2.5 million.
Okay. And how old are some of these buildings? Like
those are not new built.
They're all brand new?
Yeah, it's all brand new.
Oh, okay. So you work with certain developers and find these new buildings. Oh, okay.
Exactly.
So you have a collection of some new developments that are happening, and you just need some investors to come and want to do.
Exactly. Yeah, although
I'll caveat that, and I'll say that we have managed to rope her and her partner into also considering other properties that we would float. So they would charge separately for those. They would charge a loan establishment fee if the bank accepts that property, but it is possible. Sorry, I know you don't want to maybe publicize that, but I got to tell people.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I think I think all three of us in here, when we work as agents and the middleman between the client and the property, and is we need to really describe to the client clearly what the cost and the expectation of the property and the yield, the scenario looks like, because otherwise we get inquiries, people jump online and say, hey, I see this 15% rental yield, old rundown property in Hokkaido for $200,000, and you told me you can get 60% financing. So for $80,000, I can get it all done. And like, that's
right. Let's just make clear that straight for new builds or very new builds, second or third year.
Even with us, we find with, so how the banks tend to assess investment properties, especially with wooden structures. So wooden structures have a, I always get confused, 23-year usable life. The amortization depreciation life for accounting purposes, tax purposes, is 23 years. So if you look at a property that's already 20 years old, the bank and the tax office will say, well, this has roughly a 3 to 5 year remaining usable life as an asset.
Right.
And the bank says, well, we're not going to give you a 20-year loan on a asset that's only got a 5-year usable life. And so those are the ones that tend to be interesting in terms of the yield, the high yield return, are those older rundown buildings, or like just the more aged, right? It's not necessarily.
Look, to be fair, if you're taking out a loan, then your cash on cash in pocket yield is actually higher than what the yield would be if you were buying it in cash, because you still have something left over after you pay the loan off, right?
Oh, yeah. So for cash on cash, yeah, definitely when you do that analysis. But my point rather is when people just look at it externally, they see two buildings, right? Up building A, building B. Building A is brand new. It gets a 3% yield, 2.5% rental yield. And property B is 7% rental yield, 20 years old, 20 or 30 years old. And of course, they are often attracted by the slightly better yield, but unfortunately you cannot get the same kind of financing, or you may not be able to get financing at all for either older buildings or buildings that are in areas that the bank doesn't like. You know, I've had some, had one client, he was looking regularly in Saitama for buildings. Mm-hmm. And Saitama has a lot of regions that are in non-zoned areas. So the zoning is, there's no zoning or planning in that area.
Mm-hmm.
The council doesn't have it. So the bank doesn't want to use that as collateral. If the government even isn't trying to promote residents in that area, then even if it's next to a factory and looks like a great cash cow, financing is very difficult.
Right. So,
although it may look interesting in terms of numbers, when you just cannot finance the property, the seller understands that this is going to be difficult to finance. It's mostly a cash purchase. So the yield needs to be very attractive, which means they reduce the cost price in order to, to attract cash buyers. But yeah, that's why for those looking, I think, to do the financing approach, you need to find a more attractive property. And the more attractive it is, the lower the yield is going to be.
But we usually tell people to let the, if you are applying for a loan, whether it's as a domestic investor or an overseas investor, the first step would be to talk to your bank and see what their criteria is, because there's no point in us running around like headless chooks getting all these beautiful potential properties that are never going to be approved, right? So let's do the research based on what we know is likely to. But speaking of numbers, Alicia, what kind of, okay, so you mentioned 40% deposit, loan term, I think you mentioned up to 35 years, right?
For steel framed.
Okay.
So 35 years, but for a wooden structure without the steel frame, it's only 25 years.
And for concrete?
For concrete RC, that's 40 years.
40 years. Okay. And what sort of interest rates and other costs are they going to be bearing?
So right now we're getting at 2%. So this
that's
year,
pretty good I believe for non-resident investors. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why we keep borrowing too. until they say no to us, we'll keep borrowing.
Yeah. Give me all your money. 2%. I'll take it.
And any other, so what are the costs of establishing the loan? Cost of funds, cost of your fee, application, what's involved in total?
Yeah, so our fee is only 3% as a buyer's commission, represent the buyer, 3% of purchase price. And the loan fee is typically between 1.2 to 1.5% of the purchase price, of the loan amount.
Okay.
The underwriting cost. Those are two.
And is that added to the balance of the loan, or is that payable in advance?
That will be payable upon closing, because part of the cost that
along with the 40%. Okay.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rule of thumb for the closing cost is typically around 7%. That's including the 3% commission, and loan underwriting cost, and also transfer taxes, sale taxes, and other applicable local taxes. Those are roughly closing costs.
Okay, so very similar to any normal purchase in Japan, about 7% or 7 to 8%, depending on the official evals, right?
Right, exactly.
And my ask, so with the corporate establishment, right? What's the cost of that? I'm guessing a few hundred thousand yen, but
right. So it's about 300,000
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
300,000 yen. And do you have an accountant who does the ongoing accounting work?
Yes, we have many accountants for different clients.
Okay.
And also the judicial scrivener, the Shihou Shoshi.
Yeah. What's your ideal clients look like?
My ideal clients?
What's the demographic? Of, you know, like what kind of person should reach out?
Any clients is welcome. I've just been talking to clients with different needs. Some of them just really want to get this business manager visa, right? So they just want a place that they can like let's say they bought a 12 units, they want to reserve one for using as their office to apply for the business manager visa, and one reserve for themselves, and one reserve for friends who come over and visit and rent out the rest. So that's one type of client.
Or they need to leave something for the income. Otherwise, the immigration department is not going to renew their visa after a year.
That's true. Yeah. So some of the clients, they wanted to get business manager visa through operating real estate, multifamily income property. And some clients who are just purely looking to diversify their investment portfolios. So there's also some clients' needs.
Okay. I'm curious, Lisha, how did you get from, you mentioned you've been working as a lawyer in the US, right?
Yes, a lawyer, realtor, and also lender.
Okay, realtor and lender as well. Okay, so that kind of answers half my question. So for you, it was kind of a no-brainer, I guess, when you figured out that you can get these kinds of loan products in Japan, then like, hey, I'll just do what I'm doing in the US and I'll start doing it in Japan, right?
Exactly, yes.
How did you get your, so not being in real estate in Japan, because you mentioned 2022, that's not that long ago. How did you then establish the relationship so quickly with realtors and with lenders and with your colleague who's ready to sign on as a director? How did you go about that? I'll provide some context. I'm asking because we often, I've got another company that helps people with business setups of various sorts. And we often get asked, like, how can I find a Japanese partner to partner with me on my new business? They all just want to work in a company until the day they die. So how did you make those connections?
Those are all actually my friends from college.
Ah, okay.
And also from high school. is just my context for years.
So you've been in the business for 2 years, but you've been establishing your network for a couple of decades.
Right, that's true. Yeah, because I lived in Japan for many years.
Right, gotcha. Are you planning to come back to Japan, by the way?
Yes, I have been going back pretty often, actually, at least 3-4 times a year. Sometimes I can stay up to like 1 month or 2 months at a time.
Very cool. So, well, this will be published way after, but hopefully we'll see you at one of our upcoming summits as well.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
I always like asking this question with investors. What's your favorite property that either you've got or that you've gotten for a client and go, wow, that's just such a sweet property?
Okay.
Like in terms of like like sort of the rough size, location, and what makes it so great?
Yeah, because I'm sure everybody on the show knows that as a real estate investor, you're always looking at two parts of things, right? One is capital appreciation, the other one's income. So it's really hard to find something that has both, right? It's impossible, basically. If it has a lot of capital appreciation potential, then most likely it's already pretty kind of expensive, so your cash flow is not that good. But if you want cash flow, like you said, we go to the really, really kind of far away from the center area, the cash yields really, cash and cash, the yields really good. But if there's the capital appreciation part, it doesn't look that great. So what we want is really a sweet spot for like has a balance of both. So it has good cash flow, but also has capital assets appreciation. They want to like a the best balance possible. One thing that I like is that there are a couple of places in Tokyo that will go into a bigger redevelopment projects. One sweet spot that I know of is the Kanamachi Station, where it will go through a very big renovation. One of the biggest shopping mall, LaLaport, is going to be built there by
Oh, we got one here in
2030.
Fukuoka recently.
Oh yes, yeah. That's yeah. So I look for places that has a lot, still relatively cheap, but has good potential redevelopment and become a much upscale and nice place for people to live. So the gentrification is happening.
Okay. I see. Yeah. So Kanamachi is in Katsushika
Right.
ward. Which
Right.
is just near the border of is it Chiba and Edogawa, Ichikawa,
Right.
so it's northwest, sorry, no, northeast side near Adachi-ku, northeast side.
Right. Is that where the execution chamber is? Isn't
You have all the fun facts, Ziv.
it? So no, I think that's where
Yeah.
it is. Yeah. Yeah, I
Yeah.
think Omori Station is pretty good too. It's the redevelopment project's not as big as Hanamachi, but still has a lot of renovation happening. And the station itself become much bigger, much robust, a lot of more like entertainment stuff for building around the station as well. So that's another kind of spot. That's not too, it's already expensive, but not too expensive yet. And it's pretty convenient to just one or two stations to Ishinagawa. Have you done any deals out of Tokyo, Alicia?
If you count Yokohama,
Yeah.
Ishikawa, Kyoto, yeah, those are, yeah, like we really like anything from Tokyo and then like the Yokohama, that's north south, that line, that train line.
Yeah.
Tohoku and Keihin Tohoku-sen.
Okay.
Anything above, along those lines.
Got you. But your lenders will consider properties out of Tokyo as long as they're in a big enough city, I suppose, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes. We just got two of them approved. One is Ishigarachi, the station, and the other one's on the west side of, it's Ikuda Station on the
Okay.
Odakyu line.
Gotcha.
Those are all set of the Tokyo 23 ward.
Yeah, I think yeah. If you're close to Yokohama area, so like Yokohama and like Kanagawa is quite large. I think if you're quite far, it could be challenging. But if you're reasonably, around Yokohama and one of the main Kawasaki area, and then up north towards northeast towards Tokyo, I think that pocket can be still assessed reasonably well. When you start going into like the outskirts of quite far from Yokohama, it becomes challenging.
It becomes challenging
Right.
with tenants too. I always tell people, like Yokohama is misleading because it's the second biggest city in Japan. People expect it to be like Tokyo, but it's really just the four or five stations around the port, and after that, it gets
That's
pretty
true.
rural.
That is very true. I totally
And you
agree
go
with
up
you.
the hill and down the hill, and it's not that easy to. And with tenants as well, we've had some pretty long vacancies if they were far from center in Yokohama.
Oh, wow. Which station was that?
Or or you guys keep talking. I'll dig it up. Sorry.
Yeah, I find with my clients, generally they like it's you always need to find that right balance of, as you said, like so yield and capital growth is like two sides of the same coin. You either get one or the other, right?
That's
If you
true.
get high capital growth, then you're willing to pay more for it and that reduces the yield. If you don't think there's that, then it's not attractive for investors. So in order to make it attractive, it has to be cheap and you get a high yield.
That's true.
But one thing that comes with that that I find as well is the management headache and maintenance headache. So generally, I tell people the more attractive it is as a property, the lower the yield will be. So that in terms of age and the location. So if it's a more modern building, it's more attractive. And if the location is great, then it's more attractive in terms of, future rentability. So it's not just a pure numbers game of what's the better yield, because if it has great yield, if you're getting 12% yield, it means it's in an area that you're going to have lots of vacancy. Tenants are paying 30,000 yen a month, 40,000 yen a month for rent. What kind of tenant pays that, right? Students, part-time workers, very irregular employee type of people in locations that are very far from the station, okay, quite far away. So if there isn't a vacancy, it's going to take a long time to find someone else to.
And it's also kind of a race to the bottom with the rent because you've got a lot of other vacant spaces around you that are trying to get a tenant, and you keep seeing them go down another 1,000 yen, another 1,000 yen. The one I was referring to was Hodogaya, but also Bandobashi. We had problems re-tenanting in both of these locations.
Oh wow, Hodogaya! I believe it's only one station from Yokohama, right?
Hodogaya? No, Hodogaya is all the way after. Oh, Idogaya. Sorry. Not Hodogaya.
Oh,
Idogaya.
okay. Okay,
Okay,
yeah.
yeah. So,
Yeah,
yeah, because
I'm
Hodogaya knows one station from
Yeah,
Yokohama.
no,
It's
no,
very
Hodogaya.
close.
Sorry.
I'm like, Hodogaya is a good spot.
No,
Yeah,
no.
it
Ido
is, yeah.
Idogaya, Idogaya, and Bandobashi. Those were the two locations. But I mean, when I say
Bandobashi,
problem, we did eventually get them tenanted. But if every time you have a vacancy, it's 5 months instead of 2 months, that severely eats into your yield after a few years.
that is true. Although all of
So.
the property we sold in Yokohama, I only had it for 2 years. Now I have zero vacancy.
Very good. That's very
Yes,
good.
in Hodogaya and also Higashi Kanamachi.
Okay. So you mentioned Emil was asking before, you answered with buildings. Is there an option for people to buy like a single mansion room if it's a nice and
Yes.
luxurious one at that price level that the lenders like?
Yes. Yeah, lender will, they already mentioned they're willing to lend. But it might be a lower percentage, could be a 50%, 50%.
Okay, and yield would obviously be lower because the property is a lot nicer too, I guess, right?
Right, that's true. Yeah, in that case, they're probably just going to lend 50%, but probably will they will lower the requirements on the yields, on the debt service coverage ratios.
Okay, that's good to know.
So yeah, so in my case, like the client that's looking to buy, he's already looking to for like a 2 to 3 oku cash purchase, and he's going to buy anyway, but if he can get some leverage, then why not if it's at 2%? So that's why he's decided to go ahead and try to get the financing for it. And the bank will assess it, even though he's going to live in it, they'll assess, okay, what is the expected sort of rental yield for such a property and how does it fit in there as collateral for their portfolio? And that's what they'll lend on, even though he's not intending to rent it out. It's going to be for his personal
But
use.
is it going to be a Juta-ku loan with a Juta-ku loan interest rate, or is it going
No,
to be an investment
no,
loan?
because he's not resident, right?
Okay.
So yeah, so he's non-resident, but he just wants to come and work here. So he's going to set up the company and have it, like, again, initially it was a cash purchase, but if he can get, $1 or $1.5 million equivalent of financing, 2%, then it's worth doing that process, establishing the company and having the company purchase and finance it. And that way, what he was going to buy anyway is now 50%. Oh, yeah. It's now 50% covered by the finance.
But I'm assuming from the bank's perspective, it's a business loan to a company or an investment loan, right?
It's a company real estate investment loan, but instead of it being rented out, the business director is using it as his personal residence. But as far as the bank is concerned, that's irrelevant.
Well, is he technically renting it from the company, kind of thing?
No, I don't think so. That's just not even.
He's just living there. Okay.
But yeah, whether or not it's rented out or not is not a massive thing for them.
Yep.
Yeah. And with other properties that we've dealt with, we've had to provide the rent their property management agreement. So our office, you know, we have about 1,000 properties under rental management. So we do the property management for properties inside Tokyo, pretty much within a 1-hour drive of like Shibuya, where our office is in Ibis.
Mm.
For this particular property of like this guy who's just buying, who's coming at the end of the month, the two properties, the bank also wants to see it's a Chintai Kanri Itaku Keyakusho, so the property management contract that the owner has with our agency, that on settlement day, we're going to take over property management for the properties and we'll just do regular rental property management. So they are asking for that documentation.
Okay, but they're not... Shinsei Investment and Finance, for example, for a while there, they had a condition on their loans saying that you can only use their designated property managers, I guess, just to make sure you're not doing any weird things with it. But they've removed that requirement. But I'm wondering if that's still a thing for any bank that you know of, like you can only use our property managers kind of thing.
I haven't used Shinsei Investment and Financing for when... Like maybe in the previous stage when that was a requirement, I've never known it as that being a requirement. Only now that our office, if we do the property management, that seems to be fine with them.
Okay, gotcha. And Alicia, just in summary, if we would like to get you on the podcast again or at one of our summits to speak, are you able to also provide case studies so that people can just actually get a feel for the, here's the property, here's the yield, here's how much it cost, here how much was the loan repayments, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, of course.
Awesome. So I think there'll be a lot of people interested in that. Good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for coming on, and we hope to see you again shortly.
Yes, for sure. Thank you so much for having me. Nice to meet you both.
Same here. Emil, you and I staying for a chat, right?
Yes, we'll close this one up and we'll jump on another to have a chat.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Thanks, Emil, I have a quick question. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, go for it.
Can I ask a quick question, Emil? So have your client gotten approved for the loan or not yet? So the condo purchase for personal residence?
Sorry, for the one for personal use, not yet. We're still finding...
Working on it.
We're still, yeah, he's he hasn't chosen the exact one he wants yet.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So we don't have the approvals for that yet. We have sent a few to the bank and they've given us just a tacit, we can cover these kind of properties and we'll give about 60% depending on each one. Once you've decided the actual property, let us know. And then they'll do the more formal assessment.
Underwriting. Okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, those assessments take time and effort for many different people in the bank. So we don't just say, hey, how much for this? How much for that? How much for that?
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. Yeah. But they kind of said something that we're going to keep loan you 60%, right, for the personal resident investment loan.
Yeah. As far as they're concerned, it's not for personal residence.
Mm-hmm.
We tell them it's for the director to live there, but they do the assessment as though, well, what would the expected rental be and what would this be as a...
Right.
Investment property, whether or not he rents it out or uses it for his personal use, that's fine. I think as long as he gets paid.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the bank does not have to see that the rent comes in remotely.
No, I don't think that's a requirement. I haven't mentioned.
Okay. Anything. Okay.
You do need to see the loan payments getting paid though.
That's it.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I think with high net worth individuals like this, they understand the situation and they understand that if the person's paid 40% down, in the worst case scenario they can easily sell it and recoup their cost. That's why they want so much cash in the game.
That's true.
Most of my clients are family homes, right? So in Japan, when you do the family home purchase, It's 100% or 105% financing, so no money out of pocket. All the closing costs are also paid by the bank. So,
oh, really? Closing, even including closing costs?
Yeah, so zero money out of pocket. So the percent for the property value and another 7% or 8% closing costs. Mm-hmm. So if it's a 100 million yen property, the bank will give you 108 million. So there's no money out of pocket whatsoever. But that's for only for your personal residence, and you need to be living and working and have full-time salaried employment at a company, not be just a representative director. So, but that's very low risk for the bank, because they know you're a permanent employee, you're not like an entrepreneur or a representative director that you do
God
your own
business. God forbid you're an entrepreneur, God.
I wouldn't give you money, Ziv.
That's so true.
Look, if you're a salary man at work at Sony and they know you're going to work there for the rest of your life, then they'll happily give you, you know, 8 times your annual income, all the money. Mm-hmm. And they know the tenant is yourself, essentially. It's for you to live. So that's why the rates are so low. 0.27 is what we're getting for...
amazing.
Yeah, last year, we're getting 0.19. So it's, yeah, that's really free money. But again, now for investment properties, I think it's okay if the bank is comfortable, because you've got 40% skin in the game.
Right.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which, if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know, they're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
So, can I ask another question? So for the ones that getting this resident loan, a permanent and personal resident loan, have you seen any business and manager visa people? Like, because normally for people getting business manager visa, they kind of pay themselves their salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any of them use that salary to qualify as this super low interest loan and 100%
finance? Yes, it's not so much business manager, but it is the director. If you're representative. Sure. If you're the representative director of your company, right, then even if you're a Japanese national, not just a foreigner, even if you're a Japanese national, if you are the representative director of your own company or a kojinjikyo, a sole proprietor, generally the banks want a 20% deposit. You still get the same loan terms. You can still get, you know, 8 times your annual income. You can still get the low interest rate, 0.29, 0.27%. Mm-hmm. But you need to pay all the closing costs and 20% down payment. You can only get 80%. And what they check is the salary that you pay yourself and your past 2 to 3 years of your company company's books, is it in the red or in the black?
Okay.
If you've been in the red for like one or two, like it's, you can't be in the red last year, and maybe if it was 2 years ago, then it would be kind of, depends on the bank, possibly acceptable. But ideally it's 2 or 3 years in the black, plus whatever, then they'll base it on whatever salary you're paying yourself. But yeah, if you're a business owner, you need to present your tax return as an individual and your corporate profit and loss statements and corporate tax returns, and they analyze both. Because otherwise what happens is, you know, if someone wants to max out the loan, they will make a company pay themselves $200,000 a year.
Right.
But the company, it's not really paying. The company's making no money.
It's not really a company.
Yeah, it's losing, right?
Exactly. So,
and as a company director, you can fabricate what you want.
Yeah, right? That's true.
An employee, you cannot. So if you're a company director, they will ask for the company documents for for 2 to 3 years and make sure that everything is operating well, the company is in the black, and that you're paying yourself what seems reasonable for your company operations.
Mm-hmm.
If that's okay, then they'll pay you 8 times of your annual income, but of course, 20% deposit and closing costs.
Assuming you don't have other debt obligations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's going to be less. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. 8 times is your borrowing capacity. So 8 times your annual income is your borrowing capacity, assuming no other debts. If you have other obligations, they're going to reduce your borrowing capacity.
Okay. By borrowing capacity, you mean the debt to income ratio, or you mean something else?
Yeah, correct. Debt to income ratio. So, you know, if you're on, just say you earn, you know, 10 million yen or $100,000 a year, they'll give you 80 million yen financing as your borrowing capacity based on a 35-year loan term. That's a back of the envelope calculation. There's, you know, they talk about the hentai hitter to 35% to 40% of your income can be loan repayment at certain interest rates. Different banks have different calculations, but the back of the envelope is, you know, roughly 8 times your annual income is the upper end. But if you've already got a car loan, for example, that you're paying back some money to, then that reduces your monthly borrowing capacity by, you know, if you're paying 50,000 yen a month, then your loan repayment has to be reduced by 50,000 yen a month, and they'll take that into calculation. So yeah, that's what Ziv referred to as 8 times your annual income is your borrowing capacity, assuming you have no other financial debts or obligations, or credit card debts, etc. The moment you have other debts, they say, well, this is your borrowing capacity minus this monthly obligation, that monthly obligation, that monthly obligation. Mm-hmm. And that's why
The term of the loan obviously depends on your age as well. You're not going to get 35 years if you're 60, right?
So usually 35 years with there's two ways to define the loan term. Usually maximum of 35 years, or it must be paid off by your 80th birthday. So that means once you become over 45 years old, the loan term decreases. So if you're, you know, 47, then you have a 32-year loan term remaining, right? So the maximum you can borrow is based on a 32-year loan term, not a 35-year loan term. So if you've reduced your loan repayment period by 10%, then almost your borrowing capacity reduces by almost a similar amount. So once, as up to 45, before your 45th birthday, you can still get a 35-year loan term and maximize it. If you get close to 45, any kind of delay that you put is now reducing your borrowing capacity. Once you're in your mid-50s as well, they're going to ask, well, look, if you're going to retire at 60 or 65, how are you going to repay the loan? What's your retirement plan? How much Tai Shokukin, how much retirement money do you get from your company? How much cash do you have in your retirement fund or stock savings, etc.? They start asking these other questions because you're close to the end of your employment career by Japanese standards. They want to care how you're going to keep paying off the loan after retirement from 60 to 80. But if you're still under 50, they don't ask those questions. That's something you can decide, and that's still quite far away, and the situation will change. So they don't ask those questions if you're under 50 or 55.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if you're interested in Japanese home loans, similarly, and you're looking to buy a personal home, that's what I do. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, and a home loan advisor. So people looking to buy their own family home, use a long-term residence, either with a permanent residency, or if you don't have permanent residency but your spouse is Japanese or spouse is permanent resident, or even if you're completely foreign but have been living in Japan for some time and a salaried employee, then yeah, please reach out. Most of what I do is in central Tokyo. So property prices from about 80 million yen and above. So generally people on income of like close to 10 million yen, is 10 million yen and above, those kind of households are the majority of my clients that my
Got it.
family.
So, but can I ask a question? If we only have US income, and if we want to buy a family home in Tokyo, would banks still qualify our US income, or they doesn't count at all?
No,
No.
they don't like that. Because they don't know what the corporation is that's getting paid, that you're getting paid by in the US. So even a Japanese citizen that is working fully remote in Japan for a US company, getting paid in the US, and they are declaring it, the tax
Doesn't count.
in Japan. Look, there could be some financial institutions, if you do that, then we could sort of maybe find something, but it's not so squeaky clean.
Got
And if
it.
you're just like completely like freelance and here, and like maybe you live and work, you live here, but you're getting paid fully overseas, and even then you're declaring it in Japan, that's one condition. You have to be declaring it in Japan because they look at your Japanese tax returns. Based on how the numbers look and what the business is that you're doing, it could be doable, but it's pretty challenging.
Yeah,
Got it.
take it up with your lenders, Alicia. Maybe they'll be a bit more open to it because they already are doing it for non-residents, right?
Right, that's true. But I mean, they're not going to lower the 40% requirement. What I want is like 100% finance.
If you live here and you're the director of your own business or the employee of your Japanese entity and you're getting paid a salary, if you have your friend as a director and you're a staff, that could be doable after like 12 to 24 months of living here.
Oh, really? Okay. That's a good. Well, what about if I have a US corporation and set up a Japanese subsidiary and have the Japanese subsidiary to pay me a salary?
Yeah, but are you, yeah, that's again, it's they'll look at it as it's a Japanese entity because the Japanese subsidiary is going to be a GK or a K,
Japanese. Right.
right? Or the gaisha, or the gaisha. So the fact that it's a US subsidiary doesn't really matter. It's a Japanese entity and you are getting paid a salary from them. If you're the representative director, then they're going to want to do the same kind of discussion.
Right, 20%
They're going
down.
to want to do the same kind of discussion of, well, you are a representative director, so 20% deposit. If your friend is a representative director and you're just an employee, then it will change a little bit, but they will then assess on your company. What is the business? How long has it been operating? 2 years, and how you're only one staff member and it's only just making this much. They may question it.
Yeah, suspicious.
Your spouse, what's very common is you have a husband and wife, right? And the husband, for example, is the owner, and then the wife is gets all the salary. But the bank will treat that as the same as you're the director because they know it's a family company. Although on paper you're a salaried employee,
That's true.
really you have the same control as the director because you're a married couple.
Yeah, that makes
So
sense.
there's lots to it. It gets less clear, and we do it. Then the big issue is, because there's no very clear answer, sometimes what happens is the business owners think, I need to pay myself a high salary in order to get a higher loan. I need to, make sure the company makes a lot of money and it doesn't have a lot of expenses. So you have to eat the tax burden because you're paying high
That's so
tax
true.
because you're getting paid extra,
Right.
and in order to borrow more. But it's hard to really guarantee that you're going to be able to get the funding. It's not guaranteed the way that you're expecting. And often what happens is people, business owners have lots of expenses and they pay themselves a low salary, 2 million yen, 3 million yen. to keep their income tax quite low, their social insurance pensions quite low.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. this is just advice that I see. But then when they want to buy a property, like, look, my company makes this much. Yeah, but your income is 2.5 million yen a year. You don't qualify for a loan.
Right. You get out too much.
Goes for visa applications, by the way, exactly the same catch 22 kind of thing. Like, no, but I am making money. I'm just making it look low. Yeah, but you're not making enough to get a visa.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what you provide the tax office is the real scenario.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So what the tax office sees is real. And the banks will base it off that. So it is tricky for entrepreneurs and business owners, and they need to do like a 2 to 3 year sort of plan in terms of how they will manage their business and their income if that's the route they want to take. But, you know, if you get sometimes some business owners that have a staff of, you know, and once you're on like have a team of 5 to 10 people in an office, then generally you've passed that hurdle of your goal isn't to minimize your socials, your tax payments and social insurance payments. You know, you're paying yourself a decent salary. You have the business operating and there's more stuff going on. So those kind of people, yeah, definitely. They have enough track record in their business and they're paying themselves the reasonable salary that they need to be paid as the CEOs of their business. So yeah, those ones are, and the bank knows that they're more straightforward. Once you're a one-man show, Kojin Jid, your sole proprietor or the director, you and your wife are the only staff, it becomes a bit more complex.
Right.
But there are solutions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But always, yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you for the explanation.
Oh, yeah, so yeah, home loans.
Thank you both. I like being a fly on the wall in these conversations. I learn a lot. Thank you.
All right. Thank you guys so much.
Alicia,
lovely speaking with you.
Let's
sell more houses. Please, people, buy in Japan. It's a great place.
That's true. Yeah, definitely.
Thanks,
Alicia. Do you guys buy? Put it off record now. Do you guys invest in any hot spot in Tokyo that you guys like to invest?
I don't like Tokyo. I mean, I like going to Tokyo, but I don't like investing in Tokyo that much. The yields are a lot better and prices are a lot more reasonable elsewhere, but I'm sure Emil does.
True.
Yeah, I like Tokyo because I don't like the headache of other places. So I like that balance. Like, I don't need maximum yield, but I like the balance of capital growth, stable and easy to sort of sell in the future or whatnot. But the bank won't give me any more money. So my next thing is, yeah, like, you know, with corporate loans is the next thing I'm trying to move but probably it will be, again, sort of, I like the west part of Tokyo. I'm in Setagaya. Mm-hmm. I like this area between here and Tamagawa. Mm-hmm. I think it's old school Japan, very established, very solid, very easy to rent out. All the train lines go into Shinjuku and Shibuya. Mm-hmm. So I'm not trying to get something that's going to pop.
Mm-hmm.
My plans are just long-term, sort of just acquire and build sort of a balance of properties between some that are wooden that might have some just depreciation play and whatnot, but exit strategy might be complex in the future versus a concrete. But my goal now more is sort of buildings or standalone buildings rather than just one apartment in downtown. That's my strategy, but how I'm going to get more money from the bank is now through corporate loans. I think when you do it as an individual, you're only able to max out up until a certain amount.
Right.
But if you do it as a company, that's where you can sort of really grow an empire. So that's the next stage of my investment strategy.
So any places you have invested in, can you give me a few names that you invested in?
My property now is in Shibuya. It's a standalone house. Mm-hmm. Next one I'm looking at is actually in Chiba, but that's more just a beach house facility. Mm-hmm. That's not really, it doesn't fit into any of the categories. It's more a lifestyle. And you flip on some kind of business play, but it's more a lifestyle play than an investment. The numbers make no sense as an investment.
Yeah, I see.
Uh-huh. But yeah, Tokyo.
Uh-huh. Right. So you mentioned you like west part of Tokyo the best.
Yes, pretty much like Shibuya line out, like, Shibuya-ku, Meguro-ku, Setagaya, Nerima, Suginami, basically that from Shibuya and Shinjuku, Yamanote Line area out to Tamagawa.
Got it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
that
those
sort
are
of
nicer.
Western pocket.
Nice
Yeah,
places.
so Horiki
Yeah.
Line, Denitachi Line, Keio Line, Toyoko Line. They're very
Right.
much traditional established places. I don't foresee big spikes in capital growth, but just for nice, stable, always going to be a nice property, always going to be tenanted, always a coveted area is what I like.
Yeah, perfect. And you mentioned you manage the property for your clients. You manage like 1,000 properties.
Our office has about 1,000 properties. There's a whole property management team.
Oh wow. How big is your property management team?
I think there's like six staff that do property management. Anywhere from like larger properties to and whole buildings or just individuals. What started off was just for clients is now, some clients will say, I want to rent out my place, etc. But now that's just over 1,000 properties under management. And then the renovation team as well, that when you have 1,000 properties under management, you have about 10 move-outs per week. So cleaning, wallpapering, basic maintenance, all the real stuff was like always outsourced to a cleaning company and third party. And so we brought that in-house and was doing that. And now a lot of the brand new people that buy new properties or used properties rather, also often want renovations done. Like wallpaper, bathroom, toilets, kitchen, the main stuff. And so now the team is sort of also doing that. We have more sort of project managers and designers, or the project planners rather, and the on-site directors that do that, and they coordinate all of the contractors, the cleaning, the plumbers, electrical, all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot that they juggle. But my role, I focus just on sales. And if someone also needs with one of the properties that they purchase, they need renovation, then we'll get the renovation team involved and do a quotation and put that in the mortgage together. And then if they leave, or in this case, we have some investment buyers that are looking to buy a property, then I arrange the purchase and I get the property management team as well to come and prepare the property management contract and handle the property management. So we've got quite a, cover sort of a lot of the bases for our clients. But again, my bread and butter for the most part is, although now also some cash investors, or it's interesting with these people using these financing, establish a corporation in Japan and then get the loan and whatnot. It's tricky. It's very, sorry, this thing just keeps going over time now. Apologies. What I find the big challenge is it's not so easy just to come and establish a company and then get the loan, right? Especially
It'll
when
be
it's a,
live for a while.
yeah, it's going to be a foreign, well, not that, but it's hard to get the bank loan. You mentioned Star Bank, they'll give a loan. Sorry, they'll open a bank account. Even is it they'll do it even if the direct representative director is non-resident. I haven't worked with that bank, but that's one of the challenging steps. And look, realistically, an investor, we get lots of inquiries, but sometimes they're not serious enough to, because they have to, the idea is nice, but when they have to just pay a few hundred thousand yen now to establish a corporation in Japan, and it's real money before anything has happened.
Right,
So, oh,
time.
no, I don't want to spend real money yet. That's a risk. Well, hold on. Yeah. So that's, yeah, we don't get so many of that. Cash buyers are fine. Some people that are doing this, that I find the clients that do want to use the financing and are willing to do it, probably already have an asset in Japan. They're already in Japan somehow with a real estate asset. And now they realize not just personal name, they want to do it under a company. So yeah, that's one sort of client that I get now. But the big one is people buying their personal family homes, long-term foreign residents, with a Japanese spouse, young family, looking for properties about 70, 80 million yen up to like 2 or 3 yokonel. Prices in Tokyo have just gone up so much. Yeah. Not much under one oku really in sort of the parts that I do that is available. That's nice.
Sorry guys, I got a 3 o'clock. So Emil, right. If we still need to talk, I'll have to, we'll have to finish the recording at least.
All right.
Okay. No, I'm good. Thank Alicia, you guys. Awesome.
Thanks so much. Love speaking with you guys.
Yeah. Same thanks here. Alicia. Talk to you soon.
Bye for now. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you have it, the fabulous Alicia Kin Wang, Master of Investment Loans. We'll link to her LinkedIn profile and company website in this episode's show notes. Feel free to get in touch with her directly with any questions or inquiries you might have. And just because I keep getting asked, which means that you all are not reading the show notes, but I will let it slide, this podcast has always been and always will remain free, as are the consulting sessions that you often hear published here. If you'd like to show your appreciation, but you're not in a position to be hiring us for representation or full consultation, don't be shy. Feel free to buy me a coffee or a shot of premium whiskey at buymeacoffee.com/ZMAGEN, Zmagen. Your patronage is well appreciated, although not mandatory by any means. Always happy to be of service to Japan real estate property enthusiasts like yourselves. No strings attached whatsoever. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.